Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the August 13 edition of Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Jackie Bakes of Stewart Peterson from right here in Champaign, Illinois, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, and from the Andersons facility here in Champaign County, Brian Stark. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
Okay, so let's take a look at yesterday's USDA crop production report. It put this year's corn crop at 13.68 billion bushels this month. Last month it was 13.53, so that's up 156 million bushels. More importantly, it brought the yield up by 2 bushels to the acre. It now stands at 168.8, the July estimate from WASD, and this is the first official crop production number, but the WASD number was 166.8. That's the one they've been working with for a while. By comparison, across the board, we were at 171 bushels to the acre last year. So those are where the numbers stand for the corn today. Now, I've had some discussions over the last 24 hours. Some of the models actually agree with some of these numbers, though I'm not certain that many farmers and maybe that many traders actually agree. Certainly the trade, Brian Stark, was not expecting a number of this size for corn. So where does the Andersons stand today?
Well, I think as we looked at the numbers yesterday, I referenced some commentary from an old friend of ours, Rich Feltus, U of I grad, that has been tracking and been a market analyst for a long time. And he actually said yesterday that history was written with the corn and bean crops, respectively, 359 million, 192 million for beans, over expectations, largest ever in his database of tracking numbers. So obviously the trade was not expecting this. And I think as we looked at it, the one chart I always like to watch when we first get the first estimates in August is the ears per acre and implied ear weight. And if you look at the numbers yesterday, the government is forecasting not necessarily the weight is surprising, third largest ever, because we know that the corn has to mature and that gets more accurate as we get in deeper into harvest. But the population numbers, second largest ever, is a head scratcher, at least from my perspective, given all the water in the eastern corn belt. So you can't fight the tape. That's the old saying. And I think as we looked at the numbers, that's what the trade is going to use here moving forward until we get to September. But as I mentioned earlier, I think it's going to put more emphasis on field surveys as we progress for the next 30 days, such as the Pro Farmer Crop Tour.
Number of ears per acre and ear weight. And Brian is right that ear weight is calculated much as an average at this point. But number of ears, Jackie Bakes, was really high this year.
It really was. It really was. And I think some of that is coming out of the West. You know, it's certainly not coming out of the East, although it depends. You know, it varies so much. I tell you what, I talked to one guy in Illinois, and he's got a crappy crop. Okay, you talk to the next guy here in Illinois, and he's got a crop that's going to be better than last year. You don't know. And everything comes down to where, you know, where they're actually surveying, because they're limited to the place that they can go to. The one thing I think we all miss is when you look at the deviation on this report, that number we've got at that 13,686 and 3,916, those are in the middle. That says with the deviation they have, corn is 7.5%. It could be 14,7, it could be 12,6. And on beans, it could be 4.37 or it could be 3.46. So, you know, this isn't a hard in stone number. It is the middle of the range. And it just, all it says to me is that they're as uncertain as we are as to where it's going to go. I was surprised in some respects, and yet my guys that I talked to in Nebraska and in Minnesota and South Dakota, a lot of those guys in Nebraska, guys are telling me they're probably going to have the highest irrigated corn bushels per acre that they've ever had in the history of their farms, primarily because they didn't have to irrigate very much. It mostly came out of rain from up above. And so had a number of guys go out and look at their dry land. It's filled 100% to the top, which is an absolute nothing. You know, it seldom ever happens on dry land corn. So I think that, you know, when you looked at 183 for Iowa, now if that would come true, remember, I don't know if the acres are accurate, but, you know, Iowa's planting 13.6, Illinois's planting 11.7. That offsets some of what we lose, you know, so I don't know. It'll be interesting. I am not sure that Nebraska can pull out 187 or Minnesota pull out 184, but for right now, that's where we stand.
And at the time of this recording, we still have the trade for Friday to complete. The Wednesday trade, day of report day trade, was really pretty awful in both the corn and the soybean pits. However, on Thursday, both managed to gain by the end of the day. That didn't seem like too terribly a bad end of the day on Thursday, Wayne Nelson. Were you impressed by that close?
Yeah, I was. You were given a little bit of heart back that we had an overreaction for the day of the report. I think that many traders and all the comments on the screen and written said that the black box, the computers, the non-people standing there caused this to be more harsh than it would have if we had people in there doing this trade instead of just boxes that didn't care and just went straight to the numbers, that there wasn't an individual buffer or trader in the pit. But it's what we've got. We can complain all we want about that and wish we could go back. Unfortunately, we can't bring the pit back. But I think it was heartening to see that, you know, when the traders actually come back, when people did look and see what they were doing, that they thought that it was overdone yesterday. And we've got a long time to go to get finished filling ears, to finish filling pods and beans and whatever. And I think there's a lot more people interested and will pay much more attention to Pro Farmer next week. And we'll probably be boo-hooing some of the government numbers here. They might be right, like all of us have said, that they're what we've got to work with, and they're the baseline. But I think we're caught in a trading range.
And so when they're out and about, what do you think that they will find? I saw some numbers, by the way, from Ohio, and they were in different parts of Ohio, so they had some good and some bad numbers, Brian Stark, that I saw this morning. There are some, of course, folks that are out and taking early indications. Douglas County, you probably saw there was a 197 came out of there here just south of where we live in East Central Illinois last week. The Andersons, I suspect, has been checking a lot, especially in Indiana and Ohio, to see how big a draw area they're going to have to feed, for instance, their ethanol plant outside of Logansport. That's the Clymers facility. What kind of discussions about the cash grain situation, how much work it may have to do, what really is the crop size in those regions have you been having with your counterparts?
Well, I think given what we're seeing, we've obviously analyzed and done our own crop surveys, and obviously the government is kind of the standard, just like any other private analysts. And we're a ways away from where they have Michigan, Indiana, Ohio pegged from a yield perspective. And I think, you know, one comment I'd go back to before touching on the cash grain side is that, you know, our lean might be that, you know, maybe we underestimated, as Jackie mentioned, the size of some of the state's potential yields in the West, but maybe overestimated the government did yesterday on the potential in the East. And I think ultimately, I hate saying this because I'm in Illinois, but it probably comes down to Illinois on how good or how bad it is as to where the final yield comes in. But from a basis standpoint, you can already sense that the Eastern Corn Belt is in trouble from where we're looking at potentially a half a crop in a lot of draw territories we see. And so you're going to see strong basis probably throughout the coming year. And it's really a dichotomy between West and East. Now that we're spread out to the West in Nebraska and Iowa, you know, those growers are going to have a different marketing plan than, say, our customers in the traditional areas to the East, where they're pretty much farming for the insurance. And so, you know, from that standpoint, we're going to see very strong basis throughout the year in the East, Illinois East, and very weak basis most likely in the West.
All right. So what does it tell us? And I know this is going to make a big difference as to where you are and whether you are a have or a have not in the way of the corn crop, about marketing this crop about selling across the scale, if at all, and whether you store it. Do we have enough information to begin considering these options yet, do you think, Jackie?
Brian hit right on it. It's two totally different things. My guys out in Nebraska, Minnesota, those guys are already seeing a weakening in basis because they're going to have more corn than they know what to do with. And it's just the absolute opposite around here and around it. And until the crop starts to come in and we actually see what we have, I'm curious, Brian, when you said they're farming for insurance, you know, the one thing that so many people, I think, are thinking is that we're having crop failure here in Illinois the way people talk. I mean, I know that in most cases, 160 bushel to the acre would be considered crop failure, but, you know, it's a situation where not everything is dead here, but that's the way it comes across when people talk. And I think that it's a circumstance where as soon as we find out what we actually have, as we get into it, then everything will change. But I think, you know, for guys here in the East, they're all talking already. They're just going to put it in the bin and sit on it. I've heard that from so many guys already. And so I don't think it makes a difference what I say to them. They're going to do it because they figure they're going to get a better basis level.
And I just to add on to what you said, I would agree that most farmers in the Eastern Corn Belt, and not when my comment on the insurance, I was referencing more so maybe Indiana and Ohio, where they've been hurt a little more than our area, where Illinois has been a little more variable. But I think its movement is going to be disappointing from my elevator perspective, my seat, and my counterparts with the ethanol plants in the eastern region of the Corn Belt, because we're not at $4. And the basis is going to have to do the work. And based on our conversations with the producer, I think you're absolutely right. He's going to store whatever he does raise in the bin, and he knows that if the board doesn't do the work, the basis will in his mind.
So I got a different question for you, Brian, because I know in the Eastern Corn Belt, the corn hasn't been flowing, that farmers have shut the door. They said, no, I have the financial ability to shut this door, and I'm just going to shut it, and I'm going to keep what I have, and I'm not sure what I've got in the field, and I'm going to keep that too. You're going to have, I think, quite a little bit of a basis pop along the ways to pry corn out of the hands of producers. How strong do you suppose basis in Illinois, Indiana, Ohio might be able to get?
Well, let me give you an example. The epicenter of the ethanol world is around our facility in Greenville, Ohio, where it's next to Dunkirk, our elevator in Dunkirk, Indiana, which is around Muncie on the eastern side of Indiana. If you look at Portland, which is just north of there, they're bidding around 20 over the D's for fall delivered corn. Just to give some perspective to our listeners, historically, basis at facilities in our area in East Central Illinois, we would be 15 to 20 under. Today, my bid is 14 under. I don't know how much of that backs up to, into Illinois, but when you sit in an area that has 6 to 7 ethanol plants in a 45-mile radius with ground that's normally 150 APH, you can see that there's going to be a lot of need to cover transportation costs to pull it or import it from areas further, much further away than they are used to grabbing grain. So I don't have a good number, although I would say that it's going to remain firm from a relative perspective as we head into 2016.
So it will make, and we deal mostly with the futures markets here because we covered such a large geographic area. But for producers, and this is almost always the case, maybe more so in a year like this year when you have potentially a large crop, but those who have a whole lot and those don't who do not have, basis and watching local cash bids, much more important. And does it do that across the whole of the Corn Belt or just parts of the regions? Because the draws get larger, but I don't know, for instance, whether that means that we'll have to train corn out of the Western Corn Belt towards Decatur, for instance. We hear about that occasionally, but it's an oddity, although that happens. I know it's come up from southern Illinois to ADM in Decatur, Illinois. So these are things that I guess we'll have to watch pretty substantially and the producers will have to keep an eye on. Let's turn, unless you have something really to talk about there, turn your attention to the soybeans for me. I'm wondering, this crop, and soybeans are an August crop, so it's much more difficult, I think, in August to get a handle on the size of the crop. USDA did manage to raise the size of the crop. It now stands at 3.916 billion bushels. It was a 3.724 out of the WASDE in July. It has raised the yield from the expected trend line of 44.7 to 46 to 46.9, so it almost a full bushel to the acre. This was no small jump in the soybeans. Although acreage adjusted, there's about another 31 million bushels that they expect to be in the hopper this harvest season. Wayne, when you saw the numbers for soybeans, did you think it would drop the market on Wednesday 60 cents like it did?
I think it did because everybody was leaning the wrong way. I think that everybody was looking for a decrease in the increase of just about a bushel to the acre compared to that. It was a bigger swing than what all of us were looking for. The majority of the people looking out there know that a lot of the double crop beans went in very late, after the 4th of July, after the 15th of July. They're very short. They don't know how much they can make as to add in when they do that. We know that there's a lot of fields have been water stressed. We don't know how they're going to handle it. I mean, yes, they're an August, September crop, but, you know, if you start out as a runt, you generally don't take off and get to be the prize hog. So, you know, it's just one of those things I think that had people really shocked. You know, and we're talking about the availability of cash grain. There isn't hardly any cash beans left in Indiana and Ohio. And, you know, as we're looking here, we were looking for, sort of like Brian was talking about, the tight bases on the new crop corn. I think a lot of guys are looking for a premium here, not to get zapped like it was here the way it is. So, and I think $10 is what a lot of these farmers are going to put them in their bin and hold for.
You think they'll find a storage place for them and they'll lock them away too?
I do, yes. I mean, I think that in some of the areas, the yields will be down enough that there will be there'll be storage available.
Jackie, did you calculate the deviation yesterday off of the soybean numbers?
4.37 billion or down to 3.47 billion. And I think, you know, the rise in yield didn't surprise me at all because they dropped out 800,000 acres, you know, and I believe the majority of those were double crop acres. And so anytime you drop out a lower producing number, you're going to raise the yield number on average, you know, and it's just really tough. In general. I mean, such a contrast. We've got clients up in Minnesota that have beans that are up to their armpits, and they're just full of pods everywhere. Then you got guys down here that got short beans. You know, we got guys in Indiana. Now, there's some good crops in Indiana too. I mean, it again is just like it is here. You know, it's specific areas where heavy rains went through over and over and over again, and so I wasn't surprised by it. They did raise the harvested acreage to 99.5, which they were at 98.5 the month before. So it tells me they feel a little more confident about it. But, you know, it again is going to come down to, I talked to someone who just finished planting 4,000 acres of beans this past week. I said to him, how do you think you're going to pull this off? You know, and he said, you know, he's on the East Coast. He said, I can pull it off. I've pulled it off how many times? He doesn't use crop insurance, you know, and so those are the wild cards that sit out there. But, you know, it's again, a very tough situation when you look at the differences. And I agree with you, Todd. August is the bean month. We need sunshine. They don't care. They're not like corn. They're not a very specific thing that they follow. Sunshine is the key because they will be told when to quit by the length of the day. So that's what it comes down to. But I don't know. Going to be interesting.
Well, it'll be interesting to watch them come to fruition and see where that crop ends up and whether or not, and we've had a couple of rains in the last over parts of the Midwest in the last week that have been helpful. Soybeans generally, it appears to me, I think, Brian Stark, need to rain about the end of August. That usually will make a soybean crop if it can run in and fill out that grain. So we'll keep an eye on that one. Is there much of a basis play from one side of the Corn Belt to the other that you have been watching, Brian?
On beans, I think the interesting dichotomy there in relationship to corn was a little different because there's some demand base overseas export-wise with the problems of the EU crop potentially that might offset some of the excess Brazilian and Argentine corn that is going to compete against our corn exports. Whereas with beans, you've got a massive South American crop, and I think that's what the trade has been battling with before we got yesterday's report that, okay, we may have a shrinking supply, until we surprisingly got a larger increasing supply, but we also have a shrinking demand base. And I think, you know, just as an interesting dichotomy, the bids that we see for export bean basis are significantly cheaper than what we've seen the last couple of years. And you could see by the export sales, we're behind pace relative to the past few years. And I think that's a big play on what backs up into the Eastern Corn Belt or the Western Corn Belt. You may or may not see strength in new crop bean basis like you may see in corn because of that demand component.
You hit right on it. I mean, you know, all everybody talked about prior to this report was what size is the crop going to be? What's the yield going to be? What is the carryover going to be? What's the ending stocks? That's the name of the game. And I think when it came to beans yesterday, when they saw exports drop 50 million bushels, I think that took the socks out of a lot of guys. And, you know, I think that's directly related to what I said we should talk about, and that is the Chinese yuan. What great timing to devalue the yuan the day before this big report and add 30 cents a bushel onto the cost of our beans and then devalue it again. And, you know, my personal opinion is that the Chinese did this because they have so much old crop corn they need to get rid of, and they just could not give these importers enough money to be able to buy it from them. And so what did they do? They devalued the yuan and said, fine, now you better buy our corn. And I think that's what's going to happen. And ultimately, when you look at the changes on yesterday's report, what did we see? We saw increases in the corn crops from South America. We saw, the bean crop for next year for Brazil, 97 million metric tons. That's another 2.5 million metric tons bigger than this year. I think it comes down to, I agree, I think the black boxes overdid it yesterday, but I think it still comes down to, will the funds continue to defend their long position or not? And that's our biggest concern. But the ending stocks is the key to this entire picture when it comes to price. And when you looked at price, you know, yesterday, I don't know if you guys looked at it, but the average price on corn came in, again, in the middle, but the price range was $3.35 to $3.95 for next year and $8.40 to $9.90 for beans. So, you know, that just is another indication of we don't have a good handle on it yet. But if we don't have demand, like Brian said, it isn't going to get better. It's so people have to take some type of action.
Can I ask for some quick clarification from you? Because you've talked about this a couple of times during the closing market report on Wednesday and then, of course, here on Commodity Week as it relates to the yuan and China and their corn stocks. Are you expecting that those corn stocks will be let into the open market on for export at a lower price, or is that for domestic usage?
No, that's. I think it's initially for more for domestic use, but remember, they're bringing in a 9 billion bushel crop, and they're sitting on, it's hard to guess how much it is, but, you know, they have not had huge amount of reserve sales, so they're sitting on a very large portion of the old crop from last year because of the program that they put in place in 2011 when they decided to support their farmers and keep them in the country rather than having them move into town. And so supposedly the price is somewhere around $6 a bushel. Well, it's breaking the back because the reserve prices are too high. So, you know, your importers could come to places like us in Argentina and buy a lot cheaper because of the exchange rate. And now what they've done is they've devalued the yuan, which for an importer raises his price because it takes more yuan to buy a bushel of grain. For their exporters, it helps them a lot. But I really think this was a last-ditch effort. And so I think that if they do get to that point, they may put it out into the export market. But I don't think that makes a difference. I think it comes down to the implication and the perception of what's going on.
Okay. You mentioned as well the ending stocks, so we probably ought to take those up in some form. USDA yesterday on Wednesday of this week put the corn ending stocks for the 15-16 marketing year at 1.713 billion bushels. That's 114 million bushels larger than it was in the previous month. Soybean ending stocks at 470 million bushels, up 45 million bushels. And their wheat ending stocks actually increased as well to 850 million bushels, and that was up just 8 million bushels. Those numbers will do what to the marketplace over time, do you think, Wayne Nelson? And I want you to try to put them in context potentially with the grain stocks report due out at the end of the month of September and whether these will be recalculated based on ending stocks for this marketing year very much.
Well, you know, we started the last year talking about 500 million carry out for the beans, and we pinched it on down as the year went through, and the prices moved up a little bit as we saw the demand go on. You know, the corn here, I think that, like you said, we went down to the mid-range of the price level yesterday. It just seemed to gravitate right there in a hurry. There's been numerous people that wrote today on other articles about the idea that really that's a little bit low for that percent carry out you know, stock-to-use ratio and the carryout. So, you know, we can see a little bit of build back there. I think that probably as we look at the crush we've seen going on, if they're realistic about the stocks in the September number, that the carry-in will probably be, could be a little less than what it really is, because I think we've actually crushed more beans and done things along that way.
Yeah, so right now it's 240 million bushels, according to the last USDA report on the August one, right? So it could be a little less than that in the way of carry-in, but it'll be adjusted in the at the end of September. Could be adjusted, I suppose, in the middle of September in the WASDE report. That would seem unlikely at this time.
It might not hit there when you should, but in reality, I think that if you were a bean buyer out there for a processing plant now, you'd realize it's tighter than that.
Right. Well, they already dropped it 15 million on the report yesterday. The carry-in went from 255 down to 240. So
yeah, and I think that's still a little high. But
yeah, well, I think so too. But I, you know, they are at least making some effort to try and change it.
How much too high?
How much too high?
Mm-hmm.
We probably better take another 20 million off that.
So back down to 195.
Yeah, I was going to say 15 to 20 probably.
What do you think?
I think you're right on that.
Yeah, I would say somewhere right at or below the 200.
Brian, what do you think?
I think the low 200s is probably an accurate reflection, and we probably won't get to that number until we see the September 30th stocks report.
Yeah, so we'll have the end of the year, and will they recalculate that based on usage, or will they recalculate the size of last year's crop?
I think it's a residual use number, personally. I don't think I see them tweaking with the production again. I think they'll use the residual usage to play catch
yep.
up.
I would agree.
I agree with Brian.
Will it mean very much to the soybean market in the end?
To me, it may not mean anything immediately. To me, I guess, as we get towards the end, one of my key points is the October 12th crop report. It is every year, and to me, it's not going to mean as much September 30th, but it will October 12th, because that's when your FSA and RMA acreage data is combined. And I still think, in my mind, in my opinion, that harvested acres and beans could go down quite a bit. And I think that's a bigger play potentially for the bean market moving forward.
So beans harvested by then, and then we rally after October 12th. Is that right?
That would be my opinion.
I wish I could believe that they'd have the FSA numbers by October, but seldom do they have them by October. Usually you've got November and December yet that they're still making adjustments, you know, and that's the bad part. It's really bad that they don't have did you know that you can put off your FSA reporting very easily, and a lot of big guys do, you know, and so to get the accurate numbers, it's almost got to be December before we really know where we are. But I don't really disagree with you, Brian. I think, although I never underestimate the importance of that September 30th report, because the trade looks at it, and so do I, as being probably one of the most accurate, because they're actually talking to the people like you, you know, who are storing grain, and they're talking to the farmers. And you know you're supposedly getting a real number, And so that'll be interesting. You know, we'll see how much the farmers really let go of the old crop. That in itself is going to be interesting.
That, of course, is the grain stocks report. It is the quarterly grain stocks, and it is the last one for the marketing year. So that one says what's left in the bin at the end of this year, and it's the real demarcation. Okay, speaking of demarcations, let's finish it up. I'll get a final word from each of you. Wayne Nelson, let's start with you.
Well, you know, I was reading some of the University of Illinois comments yesterday, and they look for maybe a reduction as much as 70 million in the bean crop as we come on into it. And I, just with what Brian said and what I agree with, that's what I'm thinking too.
Brian Stark of the Andersons.
I think it's important as we look at Pro Farmers Tour next week to see more field survey results. And obviously, as we get further into September and October, we'll get a little bit more refined. But in my opinion, the highest yield estimates probably were printed in the August crop report for the year.
And Jackie Vakes of Seward Peterson.
Well, I think when you come right down to it, the most important thing is to know where you're at and know what you can withstand. I had somebody ask, you know, what am I supposed to, you know, what are people supposed to do that did nothing? I think you asked me that, Todd, right? You know, well, you made a business decision. You made a marketing decision when you did nothing. So figure out what you need to do to make sure you stay solvent and that you can move forward. Because just like we've been talking, we don't have good numbers at this point in time. And it's unlikely we're going to have good numbers probably till January. So, you know, that's a long time to come. Just pay attention to what you're doing, not what everybody's talking about.
Jackie Vakes is with Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County, Illinois. So is Brian Stark from the Andersons, and Wayne Nelson was our other panelist today for this August 13th edition of Commodity Week. He hails from New Market, Indiana. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at WILLAG.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.